Good morning, and we welcome you to Kale and Company Live right here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. It is a Tuesday, but not just any Tuesday. It is not only opening day for the Boston Red Sox at Fenway Park, but opening night for the New Hampshire Fisher Cats at Delta Dental Stadium. And speaking of Delta Dental, just by coincidence, we have the president and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental on the line. That would be Tom Raffio. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. Boy, I kind of like living with you now because Kenny and Kitty from the Fun Bunch, we participated in the SDA 5K on Sunday, which normally was on a Saturday, but we shifted to a Sunday this year, and it was terrific. You guys did you guys did great. And then we are going to hook up with you tonight at the Fisher Cats game, so I'm looking forward to that.
It's going to be fun. It always is at Delta Dental Stadium, and I'm sure there are still some tickets available, but get them while you can because opening night is always very special. You know, I remember last year, Tom, I was actually last year for opening night, I was doing PA for the Fisher Cats, and I remember one of the names for the Portland Sea Dogs that I announced was Seydon Rafaela. And in a year's time, Tom, he has signed an 8-year deal with the Red Sox.
Yeah, he looks good. And speaking of the O's, they they look good. They're I don't think they can win at all, but they're 7-3. So let's not complain. I just wish that, given that they're closer than probably most of us thought, that they had signed one more or a pitcher, you know, to bolster the current pitching staff, which has been going gangbusters. But as you know, Major League Baseball is kind of saddled with pitchers just constantly getting injured.
Yeah, it's really been an issue, and a lot of the big-name pitchers have already been sidelined for a considerable amount of time, Garrett Cole being one of them, and Justin Bieber, and a number of others throughout Major League Baseball as well. And I think the Players Association is trying to blame the pitch clock.
I saw that, yeah. But there's no sort of evidence of that. But I think the way Alex Cora describes it, there's so much pressure on pitchers to go full all out, and they're doing this now from like Little League on. In the old days, yeah, all you kind of stress with Little Leaguers is don't throw the curveball, but now it's like they're doing all these other, yeah, pitchers, and many of them, a lot of players have had Tommy John surgery in college and even in high school, and then later in the pros, so it's almost like becoming like a way to strengthen your ligaments, whatever. So anyway,
yeah, it's, and you make a good point because they're sidelined now, these big name pitchers and some lesser name pitchers as well, but a lot of the damage might have been done much earlier in their careers at the high school level and the collegiate level before they even got to the major leagues. And so, yeah, and they're throwing a lot more breaking balls, which puts more pressure on the ligaments than throwing a fastball. At least that's what I'm told. And I guess there are a lot of reasons for it. I don't happen to think the pitch clock is one of them, but what do I know?
Yeah, and the other thing is we Louis Tiant, El Tiante,
yeah,
who we see at the baseball dinner, which, again, for the listening audience, the baseball dinner will be once again in November, not now in April, and we missed it last November, but we'll regroup and do it this November. But anyway, when he comes to that, his theory is that they don't build up their arms enough. And you remember in the 75 World Series, the second game he won, he threw something like 165 pitchers.
Yeah, oh yeah, that was, it wasn't commonplace, but, it wasn't highly unusual. Today, that would be maybe three starts for a pitcher.
Correct. Well, they pretty much take the pitcher out when he reaches 100 pitches.
Yeah,
if they get to that.
Yeah, you know? or the third time around the lineup, no matter how well that pitcher might be doing, they're always scared to have that pitcher face a lineup the third time around, you know. But so philosophies have really changed. You think about guys like Nolan Ryan, you know, who you would never really, you know, unless he was having an extremely bad day, you'd never think about taking him out of a ball game, no matter how many pitches he might have thrown, you know.
Exactly.
Or Denny McClain back in the day, or so many of those pitchers from years gone by.
Denny McClain, Juan Marichal, they would pitch close to 300 innings. Now it's like the guy wins the Cy Young Award with 13 wins and like 150 innings pitched. So definitely changed.
You know, the first pitcher I remember, the big name pitcher that had any arm problems, was Sandy Koufax. That's the first pitcher I remember that had, you know, because it was a big deal that he was going to be out for a while, you know, and that really stood out because it was, you know, unusual. Plus, he was the best pitcher in the game at the time. So that was highly unusual in those days. But
people should Google him, and they'll see, like, he had this 5 or 6 year run. His career was ephemeral. I wanted to use that word today.
Oh, that was a good word, Tom. A word of the day.
Short lived. But for like 6 years, he was so dominant, like winning 27 games, losing 16 in Marichal, basically his arm fell off, after the 66 World Series. Do you know that, just segueing back to the Red Sox, that he was actually announcing as a color analyst with the last game of the 67 season?
Well,
I
can honestly, Tom, maybe do you one better. I don't know, because I know you were at that game, and I was too, October 1st, 1967. It was one of the great Fenway Park experiences of all time, with the Red Sox beating the Twins. They had to win that game, absolutely had to win that game to stay in contention. And even after winning, as you well know, Tom, you had to wait to see what the Tigers did.
Right, and they lost to the Angels.
Yeah.
Remember, I think the last outs were a double play, and it was just so exciting. Yeah. And then, of course, like a day later, they're starting the World Series, you know?
Yeah.
Which is why Longoria couldn't pitch game one.
Right, exactly.
But go ahead, what were you going to mention?
Sandy Koufax was on the field at Fenway before that game, and I was sitting behind home plate up in section 19, maybe halfway up in the grandstand. And I spotted Sandy Koufax and took my program, which I probably paid a quarter for in 1967, took it down and rolled it up, put it through the screen behind home plate, and Sandy Koufax autographed it.
Wow. And by the way, he's still living, right? You can look that up.
Oh, yeah. I think he's living in Maine.
Yeah, so make sure Kitty doesn't talk about Sandy Koufax.
Right. Well, we are, but that's okay.
Yeah. Kitty is the jinx. The other thing people don't remember is that way back in the 60s and even through the 70s, I forget when it changed, but there was only one Cy Young for both leagues.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So that's why, for example, Juan Marichal, who was so terrific, never won a Cy Young because there was less opportunity. Plus, he was pitching against, so to speak, Sandy Koufax and Bob Gibson. But they used to only give out one Cy Young Award.
You know, I'm just looking up Sandy Koufax here, who is still with us. He is 88 years old.
Wow.
He'll be 89 December 30th. So he's 88. And I'm trying to see where he's living, but I think he at least has a place in Maine. Whether he lives there all the time or not, I'm not sure. But I see in 1974 that he made, as the best pitcher in baseball at that time, he made $70,000, which, it was well above what an average worker was making. But can you imagine the kind of money he'd be making today?
Did you mean 1964?
What did I say?
74.
Oh, no, 64.
Yeah, because he retired after the 66 World Series. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
No, yeah, and remember he and Don Drysdale would hold out to try to get 100,000.
Right. Yeah. I do remember that was a famous holdout. Like John Hanna and Leon Gray.
Exactly. And Leon Gray was never the same, and I think he's gone to the great offensive line in the sky. But John's still with us. And Tom, speaking of Maine, you know how I like to connect the dots for you, right?
Well, Tom, can you hold on a second? We have to take a quick break.
Oh, my God. You have to pay for this stuff?
Can you stay with us?
Of course I can.
All right. Tom Raffio is with us. It's opening day for the Red Sox at Fenway. It is opening night for the New Hampshire Fisher Cats in Manchester at Delta Dental Stadium. And this program proudly presented by Northeast Delta Dental. All right. We'll do it better the second time around.
Okay.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. Kale and Company live here on WKXL. NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Tom Raffio is with us. Welcome back, Tom.
Thank you for keeping me on for a second segment. I'm going to have to ask Gordon for doubling my pay, though.
We're not going to do that. We're going to triple your pay. We're
going to
triple it.
Thank you. Hey, before we go too far afield, because we normally do, right? I want to connect one dot for you. You know how you talk about...
How can you connect just one dot, though?
Well,
because it has to connect to something else, doesn't it?
Dots, okay, plural. So you mentioned that you think Sandy Koufax lives in Maine, but I know for certain that Dave Cowens also spends time in Maine.
Does he? Well, they're smart people.
And what's the relevance of that? Because Dave was a co-author of my first book, There Are No Do-Overs, and I'm thinking that the Celtics have a good shot. I'm not sure if they can beat Denver, and I'm hoping that they'll get there. I'm not really worried about Philadelphia because they play well against Philadelphia. But let's get back to baseball. Yeah, so tonight, Fisher Cats.
Yeah, I was just going to say, there are some people out there who have the opinion that the only team that can beat the Celtics is themselves, but you mentioned Denver, and that's the scary part. Nikola Jokic is tough to stop. He really is.
Well, and if Porzingis gets injured, then they're not going to go far. But if he doesn't get injured, I think they can get to the finals and go from there. I'm not really as worried about Philadelphia or Milwaukee as I was at the beginning of the year. But, you know, things can change.
Yes, they can. We know that very well. So Fisher Cats tonight,
6:30. Because I look at them as our home team.
Yep.
We're playing the Somerset Patriots, which, as you well know, Dr. Ken is the affiliate of the New York Yankees, and you also have a past relationship with them. So why don't you talk about that?
The Somerset Patriots?
Yeah.
Well, they were an original Atlantic League team, you know, the independent league that the Nashua Pride were in for a number of years, which started in 1998. And you know who was at the opening game? And I believe it was Somerset that was playing the Pride. I wouldn't swear, on my grandchildren or anything like that. But I believe it was Somerset and the Pride at historic Holman Stadium on a Thursday night. Jackie Robinson's widow was there, for one thing. And Mo Vaughn was in attendance. Because Mike Eastler was the manager of the Nashua Pride in 1998, and he was Mo Vaughn's personal hitting coach.
Mike Eastler, he was a good hitting coach, and you know we talked about this offline. But Mo Vaughn, I really believe if he had stayed with the Red Sox, he could have been at the Hall of Fame level. And people need to Google this, but his first 5 years with the Red Sox were very similar to Ted Williams's first 5 years. But then he signed a free agent contract with the Angels and got injured.
Injured right away. Right away. First game, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then he sort of ate his way out of baseball well. So
I've almost eaten my way out of radio here.
Hey, You should see everybody. Ken is like one of the fastest walkers on the planet.
Oh, yeah.
Finished that SCA in around 45 minutes. He was good.
But I will say this, Tom. I have cut down considerably on my time from the first race I walked last year.
Oh, no, you're doing great. You're just a minute or so behind slow joggers like me. So that's great.
Someday I want to catch up with you, Tom.
I'm sure. Well,
someday.
That, prior to, say, 3 years ago, that would have been a super noble goal. Now I would say it's a modest goal. But all right.
Modest goals are okay.
That's great. So you and I are using egg timers
but
now.
Shorthanded goals are better. But you know what? I was going to mention Mo Vaughn because he is the guy responsible for my most vivid opening day memory at Fenway Park.
Yeah.
Walk-off home run, and it came in the 1998 season against the Seattle Mariners. And I remember that I was sitting in the bleachers with some friends of mine, and Randy Johnson was mowing down the Red Sox on opening day. I mean, they were clueless against Randy Johnson. But he was throwing a lot of pitches, too. He gave up like one hit through six innings. Then he started to struggle a little bit more with his control in the seventh inning. And I said, as long as Heathcliff Slocum is in that Seattle bullpen, the Red Sox have a chance. Red Sox have a chance. I told my friends that they were behind like 3-4 to nothing at the time. And I said, as long as Heathcliff Slocum is in that Seattle bullpen, the Red Sox have a chance to come back.
And they did. And
because they brought in Heathcliff Slocum, who later pitched for the Red Sox.
The Red Sox, exactly. Remember? You beat me to that line. But yeah, he did threw a tater ball to Mo Vaughn.
Yeah, and that was it.
So we're segueing now from the Fisher Cats opening to the Red Sox.
Well, you know, we touch all the bases.
We do.
Maybe in reverse order, but, you know.
It's okay. Yeah. But the Red Sox opener today is going to be doubly special because it'll have the 2004 20-year anniversary team. And I think most of the listening audience knows that 2004 broke the curse. It was an 86-year drought. From their last World Series victory. And this took us through other suffering moments, you know, like when we lost to the World Series, to the Mets in 1986, when we had a two-run lead in the last inning,
yep,
with two out, nobody on, and two strikes on the guy, and we couldn't close it out. So those of us who've lived all through that, we all know that in addition to Carl Yastrzemski, who turned around the franchise in 67, the 2004 team will always have a special place in our heart because it finally broke the curse. And I know my dad died happily seeing that the Red Sox actually won a World Series. But a lot of the players are there. I actually took my two sons to the opening World Series game that year. And it was somewhat anticlimactic because getting by the Yankees was so... They were down 0-3, and then the first and only team that ever won four straight. So people sort of took for granted that they would just roll over the Cardinals, and they did. But you know what? Had they lost to the Cardinals, who knows, you know? But the first game, they had a big lead, and then they blew it. And then little-known Mark Bellhorn, who had basically been their second baseman for a good part of the year, hit a home run. Right off the foul pole that we were sitting right behind. And then they dominated the rest of the World Series. But that was terrific. So I'm glad that I know Pedro's not there. Unfortunately, Tim Wakefield died.
Yeah, they will honor him today. But the 2004 team will be celebrated today. And that is going to be... it's going to be very emotional, I think. Kurt Schilling won't be there either. And, of course, he and Pedro were the aces of the staff in 2004, but Schilling will not be there today, and probably a good decision on his part, I think, to not be there.
He doesn't want to be a distraction because he tends to say, put it politely, controversial things on social media, which you know, annoyed people. Plus, he revealed Tim Wakefield's situation of having cancer when he wasn't supposed to by the family. But in any event, but that pitching staff, getting back to that, another can you imagine having Pedro and Schilling, and they were both in their prime still, at the top of the rotation?
Exactly.
It was unbelievable. And that year, the five-man rotation, I think they only missed like one start. You know, it was crazy. Tim Wakefield, of course, and Derek Lowe. They just, and then Keith Folk was an unbelievable
relief
pitcher.
He got the final out in the World Series.
Ground ball to Folk. He throws. Remember, you can hear Joe Consiglione's call.
You know, a little bit later, Tom, in the show, we're going to play one of your favorite songs from way back when, and that would be the Jess Kane, Carl Yastrzemski song.
Carl Yastrzemski, the man they call Yes. We love him. I could do it for you, but we'll wait for Jess to do it.
Well, Tom, listen, I really appreciate you being with us
today.
Oh, my
God, thank you, and thanks for running on Sunday. My running friends, we have a race Saturday, Stonyfield race, and I'll see you at the ballpark tonight.
See you tonight at Delta Dental Stadium. We will look forward to it, and turn up that radio when we play the Jess Kane.
I'll definitely.
Yastrzemski song. I brought in my old Fleetwood record. It has scratches on it, Tom. But it's here.
I'm going to do karaoke and sing along. So
on our turntable, we have our WKXL turntable from back in the 1950s.
At least your tower didn't fall down, though. I'll leave it at that. All right. Take care.
All right, Tom. Thank you. See you tonight. First pitch, 6:30, Delta Dental Stadium. Good seats still available. Fisher Cats and the Somerset Patriots, the AA affiliate of the New York Yankees. We will be right back. And don't forget, before 9 o'clock, a special treat in store for you, as I just mentioned, a Carl Yastrzemski song from 1967. We're bringing them back. We're playing the hits right here, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, presented by North. We didn't get a chance to do it with Tom. Northeast Delta Dental. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It is Kale and Company Live here on WKXL and HTalkRadio.com. Thanks to Tom Raffio for spending some time with us talking about an opening day at Fenway. First pitch around 2:10 after they honor 2004 World Series champion Red Sox. Fisher Cats at home tonight. 6:30 the game time at Delta Dental Stadium. I wonder if anybody out there is going to both. Fenway Park opener and the Fisher Cats opener. I know there's some people that probably will attend both today. One at 2:10 at Fenway and get back hopefully in time for the first pitch. Traffic, of course, always plays a factor in that when you're coming back from Boston. But we'll see. Anyway, if you know somebody that's doing that, give us a call. 603-224-1450. Is the number, or if you would like to do that, 603-224-1450. I know traffic was very, very heavy into the wee small hours of this Tuesday morning, coming back from the North Country. Lots of people, thousands of people descended on the North Country, as far north as Pittsburgh, as far north as you can go. In the state of New Hampshire. I want to ask our producer, Andrew. Andrew, did you get a good glimpse of the eclipse?
I did. I could actually see it right from my balcony.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
All right. That's good.
The special glasses, of course. Yeah, I wouldn't look directly at it.
Of course.
Not insane.
right. But you did it from your balcony. Yeah. I saw it in a couple of locations. I as Tom mentioned, I was having my taxes done yesterday. And I saw it there. Then I decided to, drive home and saw it from there on my balcony as well. And it was terrific. Of course, I wondered to myself, Andrew, if I was, I had no knowledge of the eclipse happening, if I did not know anything was going on in the sky, if I was just driving along on a normal day, I don't know if I would have noticed anything. I have to think about that.
It probably depends on where you were at.
Yeah.
I know where we were at. I mean, in Manchester, we didn't have the complete totality like they did up north, but it still got pretty dark outside.
Yeah, I mean, darker than normal. Yeah, for sure. But, you know, you have cloudy days, and, you know, it sometimes does get dark in the middle of the afternoon. I don't know. You know what I really noticed more than anything else, more than the darkness, was the drop in temperature. That's what I noticed most.
Yeah, it definitely dropped down a few degrees.
Yeah.
It was pretty warm yesterday, and then it got kind of chilly for a minute. And
yeah,
then it,
just
then
for
it
a
got
minute.
Hot again.
And then it warmed up again when the sun came back in full shine. So it was a great experience, and I'm sure that even if you were, I don't know if you saw some of the traffic coming back from the North Country on TV, Andrew, but man, people were stuck in traffic for 6-7 hours. And a lot of people, I heard on WMUR this morning, a lot of people pulled over on 93 South in the Hooksett rest area to sleep because they had, you know, had it. They were exhausted. They were in their vehicles for 6 or 7 hours at a time.
I will say the traffic last night coming back from a rehearsal in Pittsfield was wild.
It was
the traffic coming back was the same traffic going up north, just in the opposite direction.
Right. Yeah. So
the,
it was
the Common Man rest stop over there, between Hooksett and Concord.
Yep. Yeah.
Was pretty full for 9:30 at night.
Oh, I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was, and I'm sure the bathrooms are pretty full as well, because people were trapped. You know, I can't imagine. That's what I was thinking about. The people trapped in their cars for 6 and 7 hours at a time, not being able to get out. My first thought was, you know what? But at any rate, it was a great tourism event for the state of New Hampshire, as all the hotels in the North Country were booked as they had been for years. I mean, a couple of years people have been planning for this. So it was great, except for the exiting traffic, which created some issues. But I don't think anybody was hurt. I don't think there were any accidents of any kind. And people enjoyed the eclipse. And we won't see another one probably in our lifetime like that one. Anyway, that was the first one like it since, I believe, 1959, as Amanda mentioned yesterday from the McAuliffe Shepherd Discovery Center, which had a great crowd yesterday. I happened to drive by it around about 12:30, and I was in the vicinity, so I decided to go out of my way a little bit and see how many people showed up. And boy, there were a lot of people already, and that was like 3 hours before the eclipse. A lot of people showed up at the McAuliffe Shepherd Discovery Center yesterday, too. And I think it was about the eclipse, but it's a lot about sharing an event with people as well, and being around people and seeing their reactions and talking about it and the memory that this will have. I mean, so many youngsters, grade school, high school, whatever, seeing an event like this, they will always remember it, because I do remember the 1959 eclipse. Same warnings about not looking at the sun and all that, and special glasses. And I remember watching that event, not looking directly at the sun, but I was under a weeping willow tree. Honestly, this sounds like a fable.
It's very picturesque.
Yes,
yeah.
A weeping willow tree in my grandparents' backyard in Wilmington, Massachusetts. That's where I was. I was standing under a weeping willow tree. My mother and father were there. My great-grandfather was there to commemorate the event. And, you remember those things, even if you're very young. And I'm sure people who experience this eclipse will have those same fond memories of years gone by. Anyway, I can't believe I've gotten this far into the show today without bragging. I shouldn't say bragging. I have nothing to brag about here. But my daughter went to the University of Connecticut. I've been a big UConn fan, basketball and football, for many years. And the UConn Huskies did it again. They won their second straight NCAA basketball championship. The men did it last night and did it in style over Purdue. 75-60 was the final score. Back-to-back men's championships for UConn under head coach Danny Hurley. And that's the only thing I worry about is that, you know, now Hurley is going to have lots of offers thrown at him. Very lucrative offers, I'm sure, by some collegiate teams. Kentucky's open right now as John Calipari left Kentucky yesterday to go to Arkansas for 4 years as head coach. So Dan Hurley is going to get a lot of offers thrown at him because he is a terrific coach. He is a terrific basketball coach. And he could, you know, get probably more money than he could get at the University of Connecticut, somewhere else, like Kentucky, or maybe in the NBA. So that's my biggest concern. But anyway, we'll enjoy it while we can. UConn has won two in a row. It was a lot of fun. The women did well, too, as they made it to the Final Four. But the men prevailed last night. 75-60, and first back-to-back champion in 17 years since Florida did it back in 2006 and 2007. So there you go. The other thing I wanted to mention today, something coming up, New Hampshire Opera Idol, the competition, and the audience at the event will be choosing the winners, and this is coming up on Sunday, April 28th, 3 p.m., and it's going to take place at the Bank of New Hampshire stage, and it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be 2:30 on Sunday, the 28th of April, and you can book your ticket right now at ccanh.com, or you can call 603-225-1111. CCANH.com, 603-225-1111 for tickets to see the New Hampshire Opera Idol competition on Sunday, April the 28th. So there you go. Something very unique. And we hope to see you there on the 28th of April. We'll take a break. We will continue heading down the home stretch. We still have the Yaz song to come. So get your cassette recorders ready, folks. I brought in my old record, my old Fleetwood record. And we're going to play it soon right here. WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Welcome back. Kale and Company Live here, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Opening day for the Red Sox in Fenway. Opening night for the Fisher Cats in Manchester. Lots of reading in the Boston Globe that lots of new additions to the Fenway Park menu this year. They're going to have new, what they're calling, cookie monsters. And originally they were designed to weigh 2.2 pounds. Can you imagine that? A cookie, 2.2 pounds? Anyway, it's been cut down to a meager 1 pound cookie monster. It says here, enough to feed a family of four for at least a few innings. I kind of doubt that. But it has a half-pound sibling, too, that will be available at the Red Sox home opener today and throughout the season at the Fenway concession stands. The executive chef, Ron Abel, said he finished a full monster in under 20 minutes. 20 minutes for Ron to finish that one-pound cookie. But he said it's not for the faint of heart or the weak of stomach, is what he said. Also in preparation for the home opener, the chefs and bakers at Fenway whipped up 500 of those 1 pound cookies and 800 half pound cookies. and they also produced more than 1,000 Boston cream pie trifles. Another new item that will be available throughout the park. I always think of baseball. When I think of baseball, I always think of a Boston cream pie trifle. That's probably going to cost you $25 at Fenway Park. It features a rich chocolate ganache over silky vanilla pastry cream and a fluffy vanilla sponge cake. So, there you go. At Fenway Park. You know, I remember the days way back when they had hot dogs, ham sandwiches, peanuts, popcorn, soda, and beer. That was it. That was pretty much it. And now they have pastry chefs making stuff for the concession stands, which I swear to you, folks, I would never purchase. Not because I don't like what it tastes like or anything else, but you know the price will be extraordinarily high at Fenway Park. Also, they have other dessert, new premium dessert options, including cookies and cream cheesecake. Sounds pretty good. Toasted coconut creme brulee and sticky toffee pudding. But those are only available in the suites and other premium seats. And the pastry chefs are also experimenting with a recipe for bumpy cake. What is bumpy cake, you ask? It is a chocolate dessert made popular in Michigan, but it's not ready for its debut quite yet. And one of the biggest developments of the off-season is a new condiment supplier at Fenway Park. The Red Sox 3-year contract with True Made Foods, makers of a much maligned sugar-free ketchup, ended in November. Heinz will now supply the ketchup and relish, while Mike's Amazing will supply the mustard and mayonnaise. So you're all set. Also being introduced, a number of savory items to Fenway's rotation. The star is what the director of all this calls Irish nachos. Crispy waffle fries loaded with corned beef, Russian dressing, sour cream, pickles, scallions, and cheese. A healthy option is what he's calling it. Also on the menu, a barbecue bacon burger with caramelized onions. Now that sounds wonderful. And a fried chicken sandwich with bacon, Vermont cheddar cheese, and Grillo's pickles. I'm making myself hungry here. Also back is the lobster roll, Sal's Pizza, returns for another year as the official pizza of Fenway Park, and the classic New England clam roll. Fried clam roll is returning to the lineup with a twist this time. This year's clam roll is made with togashi. No. I got that wrong. Togarashi? Do you know what that is, Andrew? Togarashi? That's a
I can't say that I do, but I'm looking it up right now out of morbid curiosity.
Well, yeah, it's a Japanese spice blend that adds a citrusy kick to a New England staple.
It's a sashimi. It's like a variation of sashimi.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
If you say so, I will take it.
That's what it says on here. It says sashimi togarashi. That's a spice.
Oh, okay. Very good. And features a crunchy slaw made of radish, carrots, and cabbage to counter the richness of the clams. I don't want my clams countered. I like fried clams. Just dip them in tartar sauce.
Oh, yeah. Fried clam bellies are the best.
Oh, boy. I might have to break down at Fenway one time this year and get those fried clams at Fenway. I don't know. Anyway, I brought it in. I brought the old Fleetwood scratchy record in, the Impossible Dream album from 1967. What would an opening day be like without the Yaz song?
One second. We're dusting off the record.
Oh. All right. All right. Okay. It was very dusty.
It was very
dusty. Sorry, Andrew, that I had to hand it to you in that condition.
Carl Yastrzemski. Carl Yastrzemski. Carl Yastrzemski. The man they call Yas. We love him. Carl Yastrzemski. Carl Yastrzemski. Carl Yastrzemski. What power he has. Our Boston team is always on the beam, cause we got Yas. We stomp and clap our hands, and Yaz is Jazz. Those rival pitchers on the mound all shake. They dread each windup that they have to take. When number 8 is standing at the plate, and then he swings. Wow, there it goes again. Wow, there it goes again. Wow, there it goes again. A rival batter. Hits one off the wall, and there's Yastrzemski going for the ball. They try for two, the runner knows he's through. Ah, look at Yaz! Whoa, he threw him out again. Carl Yastrzemski, Carl Yastrzemski, Carl Yastrzemski, the man they call Yaz. Carl Yastrzemski, Carl Yastrzemski, he's the idol of Boston, Mass. On Beacon Hill, gives them quite a thrill. In Southie, too, there's lots of whoop-de-doo. In the North End, they call Carl friend, and they hope the season will never end. From Wellesley Way, they come to watch him play, and on Cape Cod, they take a holiday from all about. They come to shout, yell for Yaz to hit one out. The state of Maine is going quite insane, and in Vermont, it's only Yaz they want. From every state, they come and wait to see Yastrzemski at home plate. Our Boston team, it's always on the beam, cause we got Yaz. We Fenway fans, we stomp and clap our hands, and Yaz is Jazz. Yastrzemski is a lengthy name. It fits quite nicely in our Hall of Fame. We love him so. In Boston, we all know that when he swings, yeah, here we go again.
Here we go again. Another Fenway season upon us. That was the late, great Jess Kane, a song recorded back in 1967, featured on the Impossible Dream album that we dusted off for you this morning, scratches and all, and played it on our WKXL turntable here on Reddington Road, the reliable turntable that's been around for years and years here at WKXL. And I'll tell you what, the 2004 team is being honored today, as well they should be. 20 years after they broke the curse of the Bambino, after 86 years. But the year that turned the entire franchise around was 1967. Don't let anybody tell you any different, because that's so true. And that's the year that song was recorded, the year that Yaz won the Triple Crown in the American League. Red Sox did lose the World Series in 7 games to the St. Louis Cardinals, but 67 under the... Under the great manager Dick Williams, that was the year that turned the entire franchise around, because there were some talks, some thoughts anyway, that the Red Sox, believe it or not, might move from Boston because things were so bad. Attendance was awful. In 1966, they had the worst attendance in the American League. They finished a half game ahead of the last-place New York Yankees in 1966. And in 67, they turned the whole thing around. And that was the real pivotal season for the Boston Red Sox. It was 1967. Yaz had an amazing year, the most amazing year I've ever seen from anybody. And made it into the Hall of Fame in 1989 with Johnny Bench. They went in on the same class, 1989. Hall of Fame. All right. Tomorrow we'll talk about something completely different here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. But we had fun today talking baseball, talking the culinary delights at Fenway Park, and just hanging out with you for an hour here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Excuse me. Thanks to Tom Raffio for joining me this morning. Thanks to Andrew, our producer, but thanks to you especially for joining us. And remember, always look on the bright side of life. Have a great opening day, everybody.